hopefully we will finish Tochein proper. Refuah, we're going to talk about next, which is a subset of Tochein, is a Gezeira because of Tochein, but it has its own internal concepts. So we'll start with that presumably on Monday, but we can consider that kind of a separate idea. Today, I would like to finish the issues that are coming out of Tochein proper. And that being the case, then our schedule should be start Refuah on Monday, finish Tochein today, tomorrow being a Parsha day, and Sunday. So Sunday is normally our Halacha L'Maaseh slot. What I'm thinking is, since we'll be a little bit off schedule because we want to talk about Refuah after we've learned the Sugya a little bit, I'm thinking maybe Sunday would be a good day to talk about Purim a little bit. Otherwise, it'll be hard to squeeze in because there's quite a lot to say about Purim and not that many extra days. So I think that's probably a good agenda item for Sunday. We'll say more about it at various times as well. But I think that should be our basic agenda. So try to close off the Tochein discussions today with Refuah separately starting on Monday. Tomorrow Parsha, Sunday Purim. On that note, so our sugya for today, yesterday we basically got to discuss most of what we wanted to say about Tochein after Tochein. It's interesting. One point that we didn't get up to, which connects to Refuah a little bit, because there's also a halakhic literature about whether or not one can grind medicine into food, let's say for children or for adults who prefer to take it that way or need to take it that way. So is that permissible? So that is the intersection of two points, because taking the medicine itself has its own issues, so that's what we'll talk about next week. But assuming that it was mutter to take the medicine in the first place, so then the question is the act of grinding the medicine a problem? So that's a discussion in of itself, and Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank assumes that in that context, that's a case of Tochein achar Tochein. So there, what model does that fit in terms of what we spoke about yesterday? That would be model two, really, right? So now, I mentioned yesterday I was looking for these markers that somebody was going to bring me. That individual did bring them today. So even though it was for yesterday, we can quickly just put on the board what we would have put on. So basically our three models, right? So normal Tochein is big becomes small, etc. Many of these. All right, so this is normal Tochein. Now the question of ain't Tochein acher Tochein, we saw basically three models. Big becomes small, somehow magically becomes big again, and then becomes small. That's relevant to the case of bread, etc., or anything that becomes reconstituted. And here you could have two versions. You could have it becomes something else big, or it becomes the same original big thing somehow, which is presumably a more chumer type of case, because then you completely cancel the original process. The second scenario would be big becomes small, stays small, and the question was making it
super
even
small.
Smaller. Yes, super small. So that in the second scenario, that's what we're just talking about in terms of medicine. Right? So there, it's already been ground. So now the question is to grind it even further into food. And the third scenario, which was a more complex scenario, but a very real one that many spoke about, was the question of small, big, small. That basically that means that it was never Tochein the first time. So ain Tochein acher Tochein is not literal in the sense. It doesn't mean that there's no problem with a second Tochein. In all of these cases, there is a second Tchina going on. In the third case, it's not that there's a second Tchina going on. It's the first Tchina. But the first Tchina is happening at a different kind of stage. That its natural state was small, and it became big. And then the question is to grind it further. And then we saw also there were different versions. That something like cheese, which becomes big because human hands made it big, that would certainly be an example of this, assuming this is an existing model. While something like clay, where the dirt hardened into clay, even though it didn't start existence big. It started small and became big, but it became big through a natural process. We saw that might be a distinction. So just, again, this is really all from yesterday's discussion, but since we didn't get a chance to write it on the board yesterday for lack of a marker, wanted to write it on the board today. And you won't necessarily have to write it down because we have a marker, but we don't have erasers. So this will be on here forever. So you can come here every day and chazer this, because I don't know if it's ever going to go away. Yes, hi, Aaron.
Hi. I was going to ask, I know this was yesterday, but isn't three tchina achar or whatever else, but not tchina achar?
So you have to redefine the term. That basically it doesn't really mean that there's a secondary tchina going on. It's a way of saying that tochen is only relevant at a certain early stage. So either you've had that stage already, or you never had it in the first place. So you really have to take the phrase non-literally according to that third model and say that it's not that you can't have a second tochen, it's that it's only the first tochen is relevant. And in the third situation, there never was a first tochen, there never needed to be. And it's a different, it's a whole different understanding. Would mean that tochen is only relevant at a very preliminary stage or at a very natural stage. We saw this was very consistent. For example, yesterday we went on to say four understandings of what tochen after tochen means, and one of them was the Chazon Ish, that it only applies when you have a natural connection. So that would fit with that third idea, that if it's not a natural connection, but it's a human-made connection, there isn't going to be an Isra Tochen. Hi, sorry.
Why is this category 3 fit under Tochen after Tochen and not just Tochen? Why doesn't it come up in discussion of Tochen? Why?
So basically, it's a way of saying that Tochen is limited to a certain context, and it becomes a non-literal phrase. When you invoke Ein Tochen Acher Tochen in such a situation, so what you're saying is not that I'm worried that this is a second Tchina and it shouldn't be relevant, saying that only primary tochen is relevant, only when you're dealing with something that was in its natural state and created big, but something that was made big by humans, so there's no concept of tochen if that's...
That logic would seem to make sense for any tochen that you do.
Correct. It's a way of saying that tochen only applies to items that are naturally big and made smaller. And the fact, the halacha of ein tochen acher tochen is really reflective of that. So when you say ein tochen acher tochen here, you don't mean, oh, wait a minute, it's a second tochen. It's a first tochen. But the principle of ein tochen acher tochen tells us that tochen is only relevant at that early stage. We mentioned yesterday the Chazon Ish because it only applies to a natural connection. It's also consistent with the Eglei Tal, that the Eglei Tal had said that it's a gedulei karka issue, so it's only relevant at a gedulei karka stage. And again, once it's beyond that stage, it's not going to be relevant. So the third understanding was particularly relevant for those two ways, the third model was particularly relevant for those two understandings of tochen acher tochen, while the other understandings are more relevant to the first two types, that you can't do a malacha twice, let's say, the way the Vilna Gaon seemed to lean, or maybe specifically if the malacha doesn't have a concrete improvement a second time, maybe it can only be improved once, not twice, like the Shrisus HaShabbos, so those are more relevant to the first two cases. Either that something is at a secondary stage of big kite, or it's at it's just going further and being small, but maybe when you're making something smaller and smaller, only one of those stages could be halakhically significant. I think Sammy was up first, or you're okay?
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to make adding comment, like, to understand the third one, like we saw already, is Ein Ma'amer Acher Ma'amer, the way I think it was the Eglei Tal, but Ein Ma'amer Acher Ma'amer means that it's connected to the requirements of Makom Gidulo.
Right, he's so, the one who has that Chiddush.
Right. So therefore this would be the same thing. It would mean Ein Tochen Acher, the original step of Tochen, because if you didn't have that original step of Tochen, then there is no Tochen.
Right, that's exactly the Eglei Tal's point. The Eglei Tal, because he understands this way, so he extends it to the Malacha of Ma'amer. He says Ma'amer only applies when it's happening from its original state of being gathered from into therewith, because it's only relevant at Skidulei Karka stage, and if later on you do it, then it's not relevant. And we mentioned yesterday that the Dvar Yoshua took issue because he doesn't understand Ein Tochen Acher Tochen that way. He has a different understanding of it. Okay, so that's just a little bit from yesterday. Hi, Gil.
What was the opening of the shiur with the medicine? That if you can tochen medicine into food?
Right, so that issue, which draws upon, it's kind of the segue between yesterday and next week. So there's two issues involved. First of all, is the medicine itself a problem? Is there a gzeira of refuah that's relevant? But second, the issue of tochen acher tochen, because let's assume that it's mutter to take the medicine. So now this medicine is the product of grinding. So can you grind it further So you can put it into your food. Let's say, so you ground medicine into one size, the size of a pill, but you want the pill now to be in your food and not noticeable, so you want to grind it further.
So it's not like the issue that we have with super that it's going into food.
Yeah, no, so different, right, so that's a whole different kind of point. But here's the issue, so it's a bridge between the two issues. Once you accept that the medicine is mutter itself, so then the question is that subsequent tchina permissible? So in that case, the Hartzvi applies to that ein tochen achar tochen, that the second grinding, making it into an even smaller size, is not going to be an issue of tochen. Okay, so the issue I really wanted to talk about today has to do with all of Hilchos Shabbos. It's a very significant issue, but it starts in tochen. And it also relates to Zohar, which is why we had an opportunity to discuss it a little bit at the beginning of the semester. But it's very much really a tochen sugya. It draws both on local tochen issues and on broader Hilchos Shabbos issues. So it's extreme relevance to Hilchos Shabbos. It's worth devoting a little more time just to going into a little more detail about this topic. So it has to do with using automatic processes for grinding, electric devices and others. And that touches upon a number of issues. You know, one issue is just the question of, does tochen itself have a specific tzura? Does it have to be done only in a certain way within a certain tool? So I put on the Mar Makomos, you may see there's a Rashi later on in Maseches Shabbos, which kind of sounds like tochen is specifically using a grinding tool. If one's going to break apart something with his hand, that would not be an act of tochen. One might read that into the Rambam also, the Rambam who talks about the Machteshes specifically. Maybe you need a tool and your hands itself would not be tochen. That raises all kinds of issues, because even if you say that tochen biyad is not the ideal tzura that was in the Mishkan, so you could still say that it should be a tolda. And we find that by kotzer, that when it comes to kotzer, so maybe there's a specific kli, but kotzer biyad seems to be a tolda, still be an iser d'oraisa. So why should here it be an iser d'rabanan? So the truth is, we don't have such a straight answer to this. This is something that the later literature notes, that Chazal apparently had an understanding of what is considered chashiv and what isn't considered chashiv. So what makes it on the level of Min HaTorah, what doesn't? So sometimes there are things which we have at least four categories. Now we have an av, we have a tolda, we have yisurim d'rabanan, and we have things that are mutter. So with every malacha, you could start with an ideal tzura, and you could impose various deviations to push it anywhere down the ladder. So what's the rule for where it ends up? Seems that there is no one straight rule. So when it comes to tochen, so we seem to have this indication that tochen biyad is not even a tolda, goes down to a drabanan, and it also moves down the rest of the ladder further also, because a shinui makes it mutter, while in other areas of Hilchos Shabbos, a shinui would still be an ister drabanan. So how everything is calibrated along the four points, it's not clear that there is a consistent rule, and this is something which the later Svarim point out. Apparently Chazal have an understanding of how these malachas are done in their ideal form, how they're done in their secondary form, and it's not necessarily the case that we can plug them all into an equation. So for example, you talk about kotzer. Kotzer b'yad is going to be an av, kotzer b'kli is going to be an av, and a yad will be a tolda, still be asur min haTorah. And maybe when it comes to tochen, tochen biyad is not even a tolda, maybe an ister d'rabanan, let's say. And tochen b'shinui maybe is going to be mutter l'gamri, while other malachas with shinui will be asur m'drabanan. And of course, not all shinuyim are equal. That's a topic in of itself. There's a shinui, and there's a shinui b'shinui. There is a shinui gadol, which maybe is a different standard. So all of this is hard to make klalim in, but apparently this is an aspect that we find here. So I think we have Sammy, Aaron, Daniel, that order?
I don't remember who said this, but didn't somebody say that this was comparable to the order where we have...
Yes, so then you have another...
He's saying that it's shinui gomer, meaning that he's saying that Einachanami, right, that regular, but he's right, by Borer it was that you have Kvara, then you have a Tamkoi, and then you have Yad, right? So too by Tochen you have, you know, like a mortar and pestle of stone, then you have of eights, and then you have of yad, which is like totally not. or a sakin.
Right,
like
the Beis Yosef, had raised that comparison.
Oh, okay.
Right, the Beis Yosef made that comparison to Borei, where the Gemara gives different gradations of different tools.
Right.
And others, such as the Egle Tal, objected that maybe that's a specific about Derech Breyer or about Derech Achila. It's hard to extrapolate from there. There are other poskim who say that just as there's a specific chumrah to borer b'kli, a kli hamyuchad l'kach, so too when it comes to tochen, there should also be such a chumrah, and that's also a discussion. So it's very hard to know how to plug this in into a computer template that's going to match for all the malachas, and apparently we need to have a tradition on what exactly is the rules within each given malacha. So I think, Aaron?
Could you just repeat again that tochen Biyad would be what
Rabbi
said.
So Tochen Biyad seems to be not Asur Min HaTorah, seems to be not an Av or a Tolda. And so the question we mentioned is that in other malachas such as Kotzer, so
right.
Even if we have this Yad Kli distinction, so a Yad ends up as a Tolda. Should be Asur Min HaTorah.
If we were following the template,
yeah.
We don't.
So apparently we see that we don't have an absolute sliding equation where we can just put every malacha in, and each malacha has its own standards of expectation. Daniel?
No.
Okay. So that comes to the question of, okay, so let's say we have a physical tool that we use to grind with our hands, but what if we're using a mill? So you have a mill that is powered by, in Talmudic times, either water or electricity. I'm sorry, Talmudic times either water or wind, and in very advanced Talmudic times, electricity. So we're still living in Talmudic times. I think we've entered into a different era. This is all the Talmudic era. So in later Talmudic times, electricity is the model, but in the earlier Talmudic times, so this discussion is primarily about water or wind. So in that context, the Gemara really mentions it in somewhat of a limited context. The Gemara has a din on Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, where it says in the middle of the page, "Ein nosnin chitin l'soch harichayim sholmayim." So when is this talking about? This is talking about on Friday. On Friday afternoon, one should not initiate the process of using a water mill to grind up his grain, unless elab chidei sheyitchenu mibod yom. Unless he can be sure that this will happen still Friday afternoon. He shouldn't start this in a way that's going to have it going into Shabbos itself. So the Gemara goes on to have a debate about what exactly is the context of that rule. So there are two opinions in how to interpret this. According to one opinion, according to Rabbah, the issue is this is a problem of Hashma's kol, which is a problem on the level of Midrabanan. That for a person to have malachas happening on Shabbos in a very audible way is an issue, is a problem that looks bad. So that's an issue on a level of Midrabanan. So if that's the understanding, this is not Nisa D'Raisa here, this is an Nisa D'Rabanan. Because people will hear the mill running on Shabbos that you set into motion Friday afternoon, and that's going to be a problem. So we discussed a little bit Hashma's kol. We didn't get into the sugya head on, but earlier in the year we talked about zareya and watering plants. So we talked about having a sprinkler on and the shocking implication of the earlier literature that having a sprinkler running on Shabbos does not seem to be an issue at all. And it was only in the later literature that they did bring up somewhat of an issue, and we assumed that the whoop-whoop sprinklers are a bigger issue than what was discussed in the earlier literature, even in the Chazon Ish, not radically earlier. But the Chazon Ish was talking about more of a faucet, which doesn't make a lot of noise or isn't very visible. Nowadays, the whoop-whoop sprinklers, which everyone can see from a mile away, that's going up in the air and doing somersaults, is presumably subject to more chumrah. Indeed, contemporary poskim do take a different attitude towards that. It also opened up the question of, do we mean literally Hashma's kol? Is it only something that is audible, as some poskim did think was the case? Or no, it's not about audibility specifically, it's about perception. If people are able to tell what's going on, so then it looks bad. So if something is visible but not audible, that would be the same thing. So that was a little bit of a debate we saw earlier in the year. This concept of Hashma's kol, is it about Shmia specifically, or is it about being perceived? Okay, that's somewhat of a discussion, halacha l'maisa. But the other opinion, the Gemara says, that's not even what we're talking about here. But we're talking about Shvisas Kelim. that maybe we have a halacha that not only should we be at rest on Shabbos, but our property should also be at rest. Our utensils, our kelim should also not be doing malacha on Shabbos. So if that's the case, so then the Gemara is even more limited, because the first opinion has it as an issur derabbanan, but the second opinion may not be an issur at all, because shvisas kelim is presumably, and the Gemara has a discussion about this, you could look at the sugi inside, here on Yudchas Amud Aleph, shvisas kelim is really a position of Beis Shammai, and the view of Beis Hillel is that we don't assume that there is a prohibition of our kelim doing malacha. So that being the case, if that's the view, or Rabbi Yosef's view, so then it comes out even more of a kula, because it's not clear we have to worry about this at all. So here we have this halacha of not using a water mill from before Shabbos, and it's either an Isser Drabbanan being referenced because of Hashma's call, or maybe not even an Isser that we paskin like because of it being associated with Shvisas Kalim. So how do we paskin in terms of the two reasons? So that itself is a machlokas in the Rishonim. A lot of the Rishonim do paskin like Rabbi Yosef, that this is Shvisas Kalim and not really relevant to us, and others such as Tosus and the Rush and Rabbeinu Hanano paskin like Rabbah, that it's an issue of Hashma's kol. And the Beis Yosef has the view that really paskin's lakula, but that the Mokum Shinogu lahachmir Yesh lahachmir Hagil.
In the Tosus, where it's discussed, I was having a little trouble. How did
Tosus is complicated.
That it looks like malacha. How did that fit into?
Well, that sounds like a Hashma's call issue, but it could be that Shvisas Kalim is also that, because Tosus then goes on to say that when we say that Beis Shammai is worried about Shvisas Kalim, it might be that's also a gezeira that it looks like. Right. So there's a little bit of a debate about what exactly is the nature of Shvisas Kalim. Hi.
Could really repeat just who ended up where?
Yeah, so basically, to paskin like Rav Yosef,
right.
to say that it's not talking about our halacha, so that was the view of, well, Beis Yosef paskins like that, Maker Hadin, and a number of other Rishonim, and those who paskin like the Hashmas call, Tosus and the Rush and Rabbeinu Chayana. So that's all talking about Friday afternoon. But what if somebody were to do this on Shabbos itself? So let's say on Shabbos somebody were to put grain into a water mill so that the water mill will chop it up. So that's not explicitly discussed in the Gemara. And the Magen Avraham, which we talked about a little bit in the context of Zorim, Magen Avraham says this would be pater. Presumably, an Issur d'Rabbanan, that's what it sounds like from his language and how later understand him, but at least on a level of Minat Torah, that this should be pater, because you are not doing it, you're not the one doing it. So this, of course, is highly relevant to the issue of electric appliances, and this is why this Magen Avraham and those who agree with him and those who disagree with him are such a topic of discussion. When we talk about electricity on Shabbos, so there are at least two major sets of issues, and it's easy to forget the second one's there when you're focused on the first. But when you talk about electricity on Shabbos, so one question is the very usage of electricity by itself. Is electricity a malacha? Is it an issur d'rabbanan? Is it no issur at all? So that is a major issue. What is the status of electricity within the world of Hilchos Shabbos? But because we focus very heavily on figuring that out, we can forget about the second, possibly much more chumer issue. And the question is, what are you using the electricity for? If the electricity is doing a malacha, so then the question becomes, so what is your relationship to that process? And especially because electricity opens up many different levels of disconnect. And so if you use an electric appliance on Shabbos, so one question to figure out is, by activating electricity, is that an issue? But even if we were to say it's nothing, it's het or gomer, let's say for a second electricity, we don't think of any malacha whatsoever. But what if the appliance is doing a malacha? So that would seem to be highly problematic. Why is it possibly less problematic? One possibility is, we want to comment on that, why would it possibly be less problematic? So maybe it's grama, maybe somehow you are disconnected from it because the appliance is doing the work for you. That's one potential issue. And secondarily?
Isn't our intro shear of melacha being done on Shabbos versus you doing melacha?
Yeah, we're going to get to that. So it's certainly going to draw on that issue heavily. Okay. So we'll see how that plays role. Yeah?
So when the Gemara was talking about Seda, that's also there explained because it's possible that you might in some way beat the animal on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. But if here it's specifically set that you're for sure not going to do it in that way, like when you're actually setting it, then that takes away that concern. So it might maybe even Durabana would be an issue.
Right, so it's an interesting Sad Kula you're saying that here, this is not like other causative actions in the time of the Gemara, where maybe you're going to actually do the malacha while you're doing it. The whole nature of electricity and electric appliances is also, you can usually control when they're going to happen. So you can also make sure that you're not doing it now by definition. It's not that you're opening up an undefined period of time. You're, by definition, not doing it now. So two of the issues why you might feel a tzad kula is because maybe you're not doing the malacha yourself. Maybe it's a grama, or maybe it's not even a grama. Maybe you are allowing the electricity to go do the malacha for you. Or, secondarily, maybe you didn't even do anything on Shabbos. Maybe you can set this up before Shabbos, in which case you are even more disconnected from it. And that usually we find you can't have a real chiyuv d'oraisa in that context in the most cases. So this is a major issue, and in terms of this second component about malacha that's done at somewhat of a remove, so that major source for that discussion really comes from this whole issue. What the Magen Avraham and those who disagree with him and those who agree with him say about this point about the Rechayim Shomayim. So here the Magen Avraham makes the point that putting grain into a water mill is going to be potter, and he has a raya from this Tosfos, a little bit of a complicated raya. The Chassam Sofer agrees with him, basically because of a lack of Mishkanian conformity, a lack of it really matching the way things were done in the Mishkan, and others also agreed, such as the Karban Nisanel, not necessarily always for the same reasoning. Sometimes they have other svaras. I think the Karban Nisanel I did put on the Maror Makomos, so you can take a look at his discussion, which is also a little bit from different reasoning. So there is a major tshuva about this in the tshuvas of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in the Mincha Shlomo. So the first chelek, the second chelek of the Mincha Shlomo, I believe it's Simon Chavav. So he has a very long tshuva about this. And again, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was very well known for many things, but he's certainly especially well known for his stances on electricity in Shabbos. So that's certainly the case. But here again, there are two halves of the issue. So this tshuva is about the other half of the issue. He's very well known for his views on what electricity is. He's relatively makel in this case, in terms of seeing electricity itself as not being a violation of Shabbos. But here again, this is the whole other part, not the question of whether the electricity is a malacha, but using electrical appliances to do what is independently a malacha. So he has a long tshuva about that. Again, I think it's Beis Chavav. And the following tshuva is also about it, where he talks about, there's a major crisis in Eretz Yisrael about milking cows on Shabbos. You can read a lot, I think in the Chazon Ish biography, there's a lot about this. This is a long-running, major, major issue. So the question of setting up machines in advance that will milk the cows by electric appliance, by electric machine, and that machine being set up on Shabbos or being somehow activated, setting up before Shabbos or somehow activated on Shabbos itself, there's all kinds of different scenarios. So in the context of this tshuva, if you have some serious time to read, it's worth reading. It's worth reading no matter what, but if you have some serious time, you might want to take a look at it. So he goes into a lot of the related issues, and again, the Magen Avraham is a very major part of that. And he assumes right off the bat, which favors the Magen Avraham's view to a certain extent, that there is a difference between Shabbos and other things. So he thinks, for example, when we talk about Nezikin or we talk about Ritzicha, if you set up something that's going to purposely damage somebody's property or purposely kill someone, so he's sure that we have to figure out what exactly is called Grama and what's not, but that there is a higher level of responsibility. When it comes to Shabbos, it's a different story. And why is that? So he only alludes to this very vaguely, but we spent some time in the first semester, early the first shiur of our introductory discussions to Shabbos, so we talked about this at some length, and just to fill in the main points of it, that there are many Acharonim who assume. It was a major debate among the Acharonim, but a strong, prominent view among Acharonim is that Shabbos is different than a lot of other things in the Torah. That when it comes to Shabbos, there is an idea, you could bring different reasons to say this, but that Shabbos is about Lo Sasa, Kol Melacha, or it's about Laman Yanuach, different ways of saying that you should not do Melacha, that you should be at rest. Shabbos, we are less focused on what is happening and more focused on what you are doing. So that's why, for example, just to use one of the major points of that discussion, so a lot of the Svarim that talk about this question were wondering, why is it that Amir Al-Akim, if you have a non-Jew do Melacha for you, that's Usur, but we generally assume it's Usur Midrabanan, it's a rabbinical prohibition. Why shouldn't we say it's Usur Minatorah? If you're having a non-Jew on your behalf do Melacha, you are directly bringing about a Melacha on Shabbos, why shouldn't we say that's a full-blown Torah violation of a Melacha? So there's a lot of literature about that, but many, prompted by that question and other questions, asserted that Shabbos is all about your being at rest. You are not actually doing Melacha. If you are bringing about a Melacha, so then that might be all kinds of problems, all kinds of problems drabanan, but that's not a real violation of a Melacha. So there were those who argued, there were those who didn't accept that. We spent some serious time talking about it the first semester, but that's a popular view. And in this tshuva, Rav Shlomo Zalman kind of hints at that view also, that he believes that to be the case, that when it comes to Shabbos, there is a greater focus on you're doing the Melacha, and if you're not doing the Melacha, you're causing the Melacha to happen, so then that's already the remove. So there is a certain svara to what the Magen Avraham is saying here, that Rav Shlomo Zalman is emphasizing, that even though you know that this is going to lead to the grain being ground up, okay, you don't have to feel guilty about grinded grain. You don't have to have GGG, right? Ground grain guilt, but you just have to avoid grinding it yourself. So that's not to say it's not Nisa Derabanan. You should feel guilty about the Nisa Derabanan, but to feel that the Torah on a Daraisa level doesn't want you doing that, so that's not necessarily the case. Maybe the Torah is only interested that you are not being tochein yourself. So that's a view that that Rav Shlomo Zalman discusses. And again, it's very consistent with what was probably the majority view on the understanding of Melacha Shabbos that we talked about the first semester. Those who would want to read about this, so we mentioned the first semester also that there's a fascinating essay that actually adopts the minority view, but it's a very sweeping essay that Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, who's always worth reading, in his Sefer L'Or HaLacha, has an essay on Shabbos where he goes through a lot of the points and ends up going the other way. He thinks Shabbos is not just about you're doing Melacha, but it's about Melacha happening. That's his personal view, but in the context of getting to that, he talks about a lot of the major literature on this, which again, the majority of the literature, not counting him, really goes in the other direction to say that it's really about doing something, and this perhaps reflects this as well. So Rav Shlomo Zalman himself makes a distinction, which others share, and Rav Pesach Frank, for example, has a tshuva where he makes the same point, that he thinks that even if that's true, that if something happens immediately, you set something into motion, and the immediate result is a malacha taking place, so that essentially is your doing it. Now, the case the Magen Avraham was talking about, it's not going to happen immediately. But if you have some situation where, right away, this immediately results in a malacha taking place, so then that is considered to be your action. Now, we're not getting into a full discussion of Grumma today, but it's worth noting that it's not really clear what Grumma means. When we talk about a causative action, what's considered causative and what's considered direct. So there are those who think, I believe in Soloveitchik was of this opinion, I'm not really for sure, that causative means that it happens later. So therefore, if that's the definition, then anything that happens right now is not called grama, even if you feel you're causing something else to happen, but if it happens immediately, so then that is connected to you. And Rav Pesach Frank makes that point in a tshuva, and he notes the Tosfos that sounds like this. Tosfos and Beitz on Daf Chav Beis, which they did put on the Maror Mekomos, that there the Gemara talks about it being an issue if you take out oil, you have a can, you have oil that's burning, and you take out some of the oil from the oil that's there serving as a candle, so then that's an issue of kibbuy. Now the flame is going to go out earlier because it has less oil to burn. So Tosfos over there talks about, well, why should that be an issue? That's indirect, that's a causative. So Tosfos suggests that maybe it's a concern because the moment you take away some of the oil, that already diminishes to some degree the power of the flame. Which, as Sir C. Pesach Frank and others understand, what Tosfos is saying is that if it happens immediately, if right now this is the direct result, so then that's not called the grama, that's not called something that's disconnected from you, and that is connected from you. And the Evan HaOzer famously disagrees. If you had a chance to see the Evan HaOzer, so we also put it on the Mar Makomos a few months ago, and we talked about Zoreh. And we saw that the Zoreh issue was also central to this discussion. That Gemara and Bava Kamma emphasizes that the Malacha of Zoreh involves your throwing things up into the air and having the wind select out the bad from the good. So in that case, that's a full-blown Malacha, no pun intended. That's a total Malacha. Right, so there, the Gemara in Bava Kamma says, well, Malachas Machsheves. And we saw that there were at least two ways to understand that. Does that mean that Zoreh is an exception? Only in a case like Zoreh do you have a Malacha where nature does have to work? Or is that a general Shabbos principle, that you accomplish what you're trying to accomplish, and therefore the fact that nature does have to work doesn't make a difference, it's still considered to be a Malacha. So that's one element here, that the Magen Avraham seems to understand Zoreh as an exception. So here the water mill is not comparable. While the Evan HaOzer explicitly disagrees with the Magen Avraham, he says he thinks the Magen Avraham is wrong about this. And a good number of Achronim agree with him. A large number of Achronim agree with him in debating the Magen Avraham. And his understanding seems to be that the Zoreh Gemara is not an exception. It's a general rule in Hilchos Shabbos. It's saying that we can see from Zoreh that just like with Zoreh, the wind does half your work and you're chayiv, so too with the watermill, the water or the wind does half your work and you're chayiv. And he disagrees with the Magen Avraham. He doesn't think that the Magen Avraham situation, you would be pater. Aaron?
Sorry, can you flesh out the two sides of understanding the Tosfos there?
Understanding the Tosfos in basic?
Sorry, not the Tosfos, but the
Magen Avraham. Yes, the Gemara Bava Kamma says that we know there is a halacha that if somebody does the malacha of Zoreh, which means you're throwing stuff up to the wind and the wind is going to select it out, that's a malacha deraisa completely. So the Gemara in Bava Kamma takes note of that in the context of Nezikah. And the Gemara says, well, Shabbos is different, malachas machshavos. And we saw, we talked about Zoreh, that there's two ways to read that. That Zoreh is unique. That's the nature of the Malacha. It's the only situation where that happens. And the other way to see it is that, no, this is telling you that this is how Shabbos works. Malachas Machsheves means that if your plan is carried out, again, no pun intended, so then that means that the Malacha is yours. So the Magen Avraham here is seeing Zoreh as unique. It's only in Zoreh that when you partner up with nature, it's a Malacha. But Tochein, not. And Evan HaOzer is seeing Zoreh as reflective of all of Hilchos Shabbos. That's telling you that you partner up with nature, you're chayiv. So he thinks the Magen Avraham about the windmill is wrong. Disagrees with the Magen Avraham about the windmill. And
if your malacha is...
That is that you're chayiv
deraisa. Even though, the second one, the Evan HaOzer says that even though you didn't necessarily do it, it's still connected to you.
Yeah, you use nature to partner up with you, and that's
general,
right, that's chayiv. Now, the truth is, so what is the Evan HaOzer's thrust? Right, you could understand there's at least two chidushim and possibly three that are coming out of the Evan HaOzer's view. Right, what are the significant chidushim that the Evan HaOzer is telling you? When the Evan HaOzer says you're chayiv, so let's focus first on two. There are at least two significant chidushim that he's telling us. Sammy?
Well, grama and Shabbos can be also.
Okay, so how are you, for our purposes, how are you defining grama?
Meaning you not directly doing the malacha, but the malacha being done indirectly.
Correct. Okay, so that's one of them. So let's, I don't want to use the word grama just because we're not 100% sure what grama means, but that's, so it might be that what you're telling me now is just breaking down different definitions of grama. So let's leave the word grama out of it.
Okay.
But
indirect.
Yeah. Right, so indirect, that's A, right? The fact that you're not doing it with your hands, but you're making something else do it, says the Eben Ozer, Yechayah for that. That's one chiddush. What's another chiddush that's coming out of him?
That anytime your thought, your machshava, is completed, it would be, if it's a malacha, it would be aser.
I think that's more part of the first chiddush. But there's another thing you could have questioned, another issue that's less than obvious, also could be a definition of grama, is it's not happening immediately. Is that what you wanted to say? Right, that you might think that a malacha means it has to happen immediately. And here, the Eben Ozer is telling you that if I set this in motion, it's going to happen an hour from now. That's still considered to be a malacha.
Hi. He doesn't say immediate effects, he just says that nature is the rest of it. But it doesn't, doesn't directly follow that it doesn't have to be immediate?
Yeah, because there's no reason to assume it is going to be immediate in this case. And here, the water is going to come later. The water is not necessarily running now. We'll see that itself as a whole discussion. Hi.
What is grama?
So what would grama mean? It's a good question. So first of all, it's not 100% clear what exactly grama is on Shabbos. So to give one view that might possibly be relevant,
that would fit his
view, is there is a Shulte Giborim that asserted that when the Gemara says that grama, the Gemara in Kufchaf, that says that grama is not an Isser Daraisa on Shabbos, so the Shulte Giborim there says that's where you're not trying to do that malacha, and it may also be the element that it's not definitely going to happen. So he's talking about you're trying to do something else, and so it's related to issues of Psik Resha. Yeah, it may be that they're the same term, right? So we talked about Psik Resha, that they may have a strong connection. So the Shulte Giborim, for example, because the Gemara talks about a situation where you're trying to contain a fire. So you put vessels full of water in the middle of the fire, near the fire, knowing that when the fire reaches the vessels, they're going to break and they're going to put out the water. The water's going to put out the fire. So that Gemara calls grama. So the Shulte Giborim there says, that's because you're not really trying to put out the fire. What you're trying to do is just contain the fire. So if you could keep the fire exactly where it was, that would also be good for you. But that's practically not happening. It can only happen by extinguishing the fire. So okay, that's your secondary intent. So that's why we call it grama, according to him. So grama itself is a loaded bag in terms of what it means. So we'll try to use English words to figure out what our chiddush is here. So what the Eben Ozer seems to be telling us is that one, a malacha that happens through partnership with nature and with natural effects is still a malacha. And two, it doesn't have to be immediate. It can happen later. That could also be considered to be a malacha. Hi.
So this would argue on the Maharal?
Everyone argues on the Maharal.
Oh, besides, I'm not talking about the Zoraya issue. I'm talking about just this concept.
Everyone else will forgive me that in the interest of time, I don't want to get into the Maharal because explain it to everyone will take a lot of minutes. But yeah, I can certainly assume that it's different than the Maharal.
Didn't we say that many people would accept this in principle?
Yes, so, and no. I'd rather, because okay, it'll take us too long to go into it, so I'll set it aside for a minute. But, hi, John.
The way the Shulte Giborim explained it doesn't seem more like a multiple for them?
No, because it's about Psik Resha. Either way, he's using different terminology anyway. But no, because there you're trying to do action A, and it's also going to do action B. You're not interested in extinguishing the fire at all. You're interested in just keeping it where it is. And it's the mela that's going to extinguish the fire. Okay, so in any event, so where grama is a matter of dispute what it means, so just to stick to English terms, so here the Eben Ozer is telling us two chidushim, that if it happens through partnership with nature or it happens later, both those things don't save you from the chiyuv. It's still an iser daraisa, chiyuv gatas, the whole shebang. Now the question still could be raised, so let's say you take this position. Let's say somebody is machmir in such a case. You disagree with the Magen Avraham and you feel that putting grain into your water mill is a chiyuv chatas, is an iser daraisa. Why do you say that? Do you say that because of what we just said a minute ago? Or should we say, because this is the derech of grinding, this is why water mills exist. Right? Water mills exist because people grind things in them, and therefore it is a perfectly natural way to do the malacha of toche. So every malacha has its own normal ways of doing things, and in this case, using the appliance, using the water mill to do it, is considered to be fully kederech, and therefore that's why there's a chiyuv. So it's not 100% clear why you might argue. If you say the second way, so then you have to figure out within each malacha, and this comes back to what we started with about the whole yad kli issue, you have to figure out everything, what is its derech and what is not its derech. So those who were with us in the first semester will recall that this was also relevant to another malacha early on. Anyone remember what I'm talking about? To choresh. Right, when it comes to choresh, so there is a whole literature, there was a Rambam and a Ramban, about doing choresh with a behema, and is that considered to be a partnership or the actual malacha? And there in the Chazon Ish, they're assuming that if you use a normal harisha machine, so that is the malacha of choresh. There's nothing different about that than any other type of choresh. That is the way people plow today, and that therefore is a normal kederach act of plowing. There's nothing about that that makes that any less plowing than any other malacha deraisa. So that could be relevant here as well. It could be that even though there's a certain lack of directness in the process, it doesn't matter, that's the way people grind things, that's considered to be an act of tochen. So just to illustrate this a little bit. So let's say, for example, one wanted to be makel, one wanted to take like a mugging of Ram's view. Right? And let's say that, okay, we're going to say if something happens later, that's not a malach. So you'll say, well, wait a minute. What about Bishul? What about Afia? Right, I put something in the oven, and it takes 3 hours to be ready. So that's happening later. So you'll say, no, I understand why that's different. Why is that different, even though it takes however many hours to cook? So, right, so it is the derech. That's actually what I'm going for ultimately, yeah, Gil?
Can we say that it's considered an extension of your hand?
Right, that, so it could also be the oven is there standing for you. But basically, like AR is saying, that even though it takes 3 hours, it starts happening right away. Right? The process is a three-hour process, but the malacha starts immediately. And this is the way you cook. You cook by putting something into the oven. So it's not as if, okay, I did something at 12 o'clock and the cooking happened at 3 o'clock. The cooking has been happening the whole time. And the derech of cooking is you put something in the oven. So you could say, fine, so that's when it's cooking. But tochein, I'm going to tochein right away, and if it takes an hour later, that's different. That's not the derech of tochein. So there's a somewhat subjective question here. What is the derech of tochein? Is it normal to use a water mill which takes a few hours till all the natural processes come into play, or is it abnormal? So it could become a subjective question. What is the normal process of doing each malacha? So the Chazon Ish, who's generally machmir on this, right? We saw that in the case of Choresh, he is machmir with a machine. And we saw that, and in this case also, he votes against the Magen Avraham, he's machmir on the water mill also. But he says it's really a question of each malacha. Every malacha that has its derech to do like this, like Afia and Bishul and apparently Tochein, or also possibly Sud, which was brought up before, setting up a trap, you know, traps sometimes take time in order to do their job. So there are certain malachas where it's inherent in the malacha that the derech is longer. And other malachas, it might be a different story. So this could end up being a malacha by malacha question. The Eglei Tal, by the way, understands in this debate between the Magen Avraham and the Evan Ozer that there is an Issur D'oraisa here, but it's a Tolda. He says that this is not the way it was done in the Mishkan, so therefore, essentially, that's going to end up being a tolda. That itself is a whole discussion. That one could say, we alluded to this also when we talked about Zohar, that one could say that an indirect malacha, or malacha happening through electricity, might be putter, not because of any technicalities and what's called causation, and what's called doing something, and Shabbos is this, and other things are that, but maybe it's just a Mishkan question. That in the Mishkan, malachas were done directly, and now you're doing a malacha indirectly, maybe that's called not Mishkan. And therefore, maybe it's either going to be Pater, or like the Eglei Tal is serving here, let's say a Tolda. Now, It's interesting to note, and here's a very significantly lumdish point, that we discussed this when we talked about Zohar, that the Evna Ozer, who argues against the Magen Avraham, Magen Avraham is wrong, windmill is chayev. So he uses another example to make this point, another case in Halacha. Anyone remember what he talks about? The leech. The aluka. If somebody puts a leech on his body in order to extract blood, which is a malacha of chavala, maybe of dash, so that, says the Evna Ozer, you see that's a malacha. So too, it's the same thing. Here you're having the leech do the work for you that you're setting into motion. The same thing as the windmill. So you're chayiv in both cases. The interesting thing is that the Magen Avraham elsewhere, I think this is on Rama Komus as well, the Magen Avraham elsewhere agrees about the aluka. He also thinks that putting a leech on you to extract blood is also going to be an Isser Daraisa. So the Evna Ozer's point is that they're the same. So if you're a chayiv for the leech, you're a chayiv for the windmill. But why does the Magen Avraham distinguish? Why does the Magen Avraham think that the leech is an Isser Daraisa, but the windmill isn't? Jonathan?
So the windmill might have more of a time delay. The leech might get to work immediately.
Possibly. I don't know if there's any indication that that's the case, but since we're saying time delay makes a difference, so maybe somehow there's some way to define them differently in terms of that. Not clear, but maybe. Aaron?
Maybe the leech is you're putting the leech directly on, but the windmill, you're putting the grain.
Uh-huh.
You're not causing the wind to blow, and you're not turning. It's not like you're putting the
I understand what you're getting at.
The windmill thing on, you know, you're just putting something in the way that by the windmill turning, I guess.
Okay, do you follow the distinction that Aaron is saying?
You're reaping the benefits of that.
So it happens to be that I think Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says something very similar to you. Tell me if this is what you're getting at. So it's a fascinating, very lumdish distinction. That the Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in this tshuva, the Minchas Shlomo, so he says as follows. He says that for the Magen Avraham to distinguish between the aluka, the leech case, and the windmill case, he says maybe you have to say as follows. That maybe we have to distinguish between causing the tchina and causing something to be nitchan. Right, that we have to distinguish between causing the process of grinding and having something get ground. So in the case of the leech, you are provoking the malacha. Nothing is drawing blood until you come and provoke the blood to be drawn. So you are causing the action. You are causing the malacha itself. When it comes to the windmill is doing its chopping anyway. The pu'ula of chopping, it's going to do whether you come around or not. So what do? You come and you insert this grain into the chopping. So therefore, maybe that's less direct than the leech case.
The leech is stopping. You're putting your arm.
So clearly the Evna Ozer agrees with you, right? The Evna Ozer says they're completely comparable cases. So the question is, if you vote like the Magen Avraham, then you believe there's some distinction, so how we have to cut it very fine? We have to make a very subtle distinction, which may not seem palatable, and again, probably most Achronim passing against the Magen Avraham, probably because they agree with you that it's essentially the same as the leech. But what is the Magen Avraham's basis? What's the Magen Avraham's premise for distinguishing? So that's what Aaron and Rav Shlomo Zalman assert, that if you were causing the malachi itself, so then that would be more directly your action. But if the malachi is happening and you're throwing something else into the mix, so then maybe that's more indirect. That's a very subtle distinction, and you can see why one might not accept that. But it's interesting, before I take questions, the Eglei Tal and the Bir Halacha say a similar thing, because they say, let's say if the scenario was different, that it's not that you have an ongoing windmill, and you throw grain into it. But let's say you have a windmill, or a watermill, where there is grain inside the mill. and you're not bringing any grain into the picture. What are you doing? Right now, the doors are closed, so the water is not running through. So if you open the doors, the water will run through, the mill will go, and it will grind up the grain. Then, says the Egle Tal, the Bir Halacha, that's a full malacha. So that really validates the distinction that, I mean, you could also say they're both malachas, but that is consistent with the Rav Shlomo Zalman's understanding of the Magen Avraham, that if you are causing the pu'ula to happen, if you're causing the action to take place, so then maybe that's one thing. That's what the leech is doing, and maybe that's what this other case with opening the doors is doing. But if the pu'ula is happening already, and you're giving it a fresh victim, so then maybe the Magen Avraham could maintain, that's different, that's more indirect. Gil?
Can I feel like we made also between, say, electricity or wind or something like that to the leech, or in the case of 4-H, the animals pulling it, that the animals are a living thing and there might be an sort of shvita behema as opposed to some...
So you're saying electricity is worse than, is less bad than the animals?
Yeah, they're both, the common denominators are both like living creatures.
Yeah, so it's not, so behemoths get complicated in general, so we only talked about that in the context of Choresh. We didn't get into it here. It's a little complicated when you get into that issue because, first of all, there's an issue of Mechamer, which is a lav, and we're not 100% sure what's included in Mechamer and what's not. That was in our focus between the Ramban and the Rambam. It gets into a lot of other literature. So you're right that behemoths make things more complicated, and it has a couple of angles by which it might be different. So behemoths, we only brought it up in the context of Choresh because there it was discussed. We'll leave it out of our discussion for now. You're right that maybe it confuses.
Are they animal behemoths, or like would a leech be a behemoth, or is behemoth specifically a domesticated like mammal?
So there, let's assume that Mechamer is dealing with domesticated animals. Let's assume for now. So that makes things a little more complicated. Hi, Adam. Okay. So. Hi.
Right. Yeah, so it's the opposite case. Let's say you have the windmill that's not turning. Mm-hmm. Instead of any grain there first you open the gate, right? And then mm-hmm. you put in the grain. Would that be...
Because you did both, you're saying.
Right, you did both on Shabbos. But I guess, you know, clearly there should be a lot that's opening the window.
It sounds like again, you know, if you're Rove Achronim, you think the whole thing is also anyway. The whole thing is Chiyuv Derech. You're saying according to the Magen Avraham. So the Magen Avraham, it's interesting. It could be that you should say, what's the difference here? I totally did everything. I brought about the water. I brought about the... So presumably, you're right that you should be Machmer on that. But it could be there's a loophole, though. Maisa, as you're saying correctly, when you open up the gate, there's nothing there. And then when you put it in, it's an automatic process. So maybe the Magen Avraham would say, Nachanami, it's kind of sneaky, but maybe that still meets his qualifications to be considered Pater. So there are other ramifications of this whole, and there are other permutations of this indirect process. So we saw, for example, we just mentioned that the Egle Tal is saying that if you open the doors, so then you are causing the water to come in directly, that is more of a chumrah. On the other hand, even those who are machmir about the windmill, so the question is, what are they machmir on? Are they only machmir on the immediate go-around? So let's say, so now the windmill's going to go around once and get all the grain that's there. And what about grain that comes later, a second time around? Maybe that's considered to be more indirect, or if it gets chopped up by the... I mean, it's going to be very technical. You're not going to... It's not like it's going to make a difference for your chiyuv misa, for your chiyuv chatas. But that's something that happens even more indirectly called a koach sheni. So as we've alluded to a little bit in the past, there is some discussion about that. Maybe there is even more of a tzad lakula when it comes to that. The Maharam Padua had a kula. The Maharam Padua assumes that all of our discussion till now is where the mill is on. The mill is active, so to speak, whether it's a water mill or in a modern context, it's easier to see with a electronic appliance. This comes up much more relevant. You have timers and you have electricity. It's a much more relevant question. But the Maharam Padua assumed that if the mill is not active right now, and it's going to be active later, so then that's even more pater, because there's no connection to what you're doing. It's just later on, a malacha will take place, but right now the parts are not in play at all. So that, again, has tremendous relevance in a modern context. because you could set up a machine in such a way with timers and electronic devices. So you could have a machine that's set on a timer. And so, for example, in the context of the milking of the cows that Rav Shlomo Zalman talks about, so let's say you hook up the cows to the machine and the machine is off. And then sometime later, the machine goes on and then does the milking on its own. So based on the Maharam Padua, that should be Hutter, maybe Mutter. So Rav Shlomo Zalman talks about this, and it's true if he says, yeah, according to Maharam Padua, it would be. He's not really comfortable relying on the Maharam Padua for this because it's an Isser Daraisa that we're talking about. So yes, the logic of the Maharam Padua would say such a thing. Whether or not we could apply that halacha l'maisa, he wasn't 100% comfortable. See, it's easier with this windmill case because it's so outlandish, but nowadays in practice there are many scenarios you can come up with where this could happen. So Rav Shlomo Zalman was not ready to rely on that for the Isser Daraisa Chol Shabbos that's involved. But yes, the Maharam Padua would lead you to such a conclusion. Gil?
With the other examples in the Gemara before the windmill,
mm-hmm.
Are any of them necessarily done immediately like the windmill?
They're necessarily done. Are the other examples of what? The other examples of?
The previous one before the windmill and the Gemara. The windmill had Hashmat Kol, but the other one.
Right, so it's not clear what the connection is between the different. It's hard to try to derive a principle because there's a lot of variables in the Gemara. And even the Magen Avraham is coming after the Gemara's case, isn't even talking about our case at all. It's talking about Arab Shabbos. So it's hard to try to draw too much from the cases in the Gemara. But so Maharam Padua is also something to take into consideration. How much we acknowledge it is itself an issue. There also is another interesting discussion. We'll just mention this one last point, that the Tiferes Yisrael, in the Kalkelas HaShabbos, Tiferes Yisrael, the commentary in Mishnayos, and his discussion of Hilchos Shabbos, I don't remember how many times we've referred to it this year, but that was one of the major resources in Hilchos Shabbos until recent generations, and we have Shmir Shabbos Kilchas, another well-known Shabbos book. So generations ago, they didn't have all that, so they had the Tiferes Yisrael. And the Tiferes Yisrael maintains that if you have, we're talking so far about a watermill, and sometimes you mention a windmill. So he thinks the windmill is different. That a windmill, so you can't really know that the windmill is going to accomplish what you want it to accomplish. Maybe the water is more reliable, but the windmill is going to be dependent on the wind coming, the wind not stopping too early, and you don't know that that's going to happen. So therefore, at least he says you have an issue of hasra safek. That at least, you know, if we're doing the mazid, you're going to have an issue that you can't really have somebody be chayy for it because we can't know that it's really going to happen. So that translates into how we relate to it on a level of a shogig as well. And the Mishnah Berurah disagrees with this, because the Mishnah Berurah maintains that it's not practically relevant because the shear is the groger. So even if the wind's going to stop, let's say, you're still going to have enough to accomplish the shear. So he thinks, practically speaking, there's no distinction to be made, and the windmill is going to have the same issues as the watermill. Okay, so let's just quickly review what we spoke about today. So we talked about, in general, it's a question about whether tochen has a certain surah to it, that it's done with your hands, activating a kli, as opposed to more indirectly, or as opposed to your hands by itself. We saw that some of the Rishonim seem to give you the impression that the hand is not a av malach, at least, and apparently not a tolda either. And then we got into that discussion a little bit about how kotzer would seem the hand would be a tolda, and that different malachas seem to have different rules. That's apparently the case. And tochen is on a whole different scale in terms of what's an av, what's a tolda, what's a derabanan, and what's mutter. And here, apparently, yad is not a derais at all. But what about going in the other direction? What about using a watermill and a windmill? So we saw our Gemara here on Yud Ches, which says not to use a windmill on Erev Shabbos unless you're sure it's going to finish. 2 days in the Gemara, what the issue is, either a Rabbanan or a Hashma's call, or a concern of Shvisa's Kalim, which we likely don't paskin like. A debate in Rishonim which view to follow, so it's either a Rabbanan or not a Libud de Helchasa. And the Magen Avraham expands the case to what if you do this on Shabbos itself. So on Shabbos itself, he says there's no Isser chi of chattis, there's no doraisa. Presumably there is a drabanan, but this is not considered to be a your action. And we saw that the Shlomo Zalman notes that this is consistent with the view of a lot of Acharonim have, that Shabbos is all about your doing something, not about having something happen. Although he does distinguish, as does Ritzvi Pesach Frank, between something that happens immediately, where it would be more machmer, we consider that to be more direct, and something which happens indirectly. And the Evan Ozer and many Acharonim, probably the majority of Acharonim, disagree and say that this is a full-blown Isser Daraisa. As we mentioned, it also gets into the question of how you understand the phrase in the Gemara in Bava Kamma about Zorah. Is Zorah an exception or is Zorah the rule? And Evan Ozer says, Yechayiv for this, telling us a number of possible chidushim. That Yechayiv even for something where nature does half the work or all the work, and Yechayiv for something that happens later. And also possibly opening up a question, is the chiyuv here just because it's derech? Maybe this is a normal way of milling, in which case it's unique to Tochein, or local to Tochein at least, and doesn't necessarily reflect the general malacha principle. The Chazon Ish was machmir on this, says we're machmir on anything where this is the derech, whether it's choresh, whether it's afiyah and bishul, whether it's Tochein, if this is a normal way of doing it, so that's a full-blown malacha daraisa, regardless of a machine's involvement. And then we got into the fact that the Evan Ozer invokes the leech principle as showing that the Magen Avraham is wrong, but the Magen Avraham himself acknowledges the leech issue. So we talked about a possible distinction that Rosh Shlomo Zalman makes, that if you're creating the malacha, that's going to be a problem no matter what, but if the malacha, the pu'ulo of the malacha is ongoing, and you are adding a victim to the malacha, so then that wouldn't necessarily be the same thing, which was consistent with the Egle Tal and the Bir Halacha, who say that it's worse if you open up the doors to let the water come through, and the grain's already there, then they're at reverse situation. And we talked also about a couple of other permutations, about a secondary force that grinds more after the first go-around, or what about the Mairam Padua's view, that if the mill is not on now, it only comes on later. Maybe that's a tzad kula, which has major ramifications for modern-day electric appliances on timers, and that Rosh Shlomo Zalman acknowledges, but says l'maisa he thinks you have to be machmir because of the potential yisur d'oraisa is involved. Again, emphasizing that the electricity questions always have these two components. One is electricity itself an issue, and two, completely separate from that, but if you are doing a malacha through electricity, to what extent is the malacha your problem? All of these issues coming out here, and then we just mentioned the machlokas between the Tiferes Yisrael and Mishnah Berurah about a windmill, that the Tiferes Yisrael thought wind is too unreliable, it's always going to be a Hasra Safek kind of thing, and the Mishnah Berurah saying that no, it's always going to get a groger, so don't think that that's going to make much of a difference. Okay, so we'll stop there. Tomorrow, Parshas Truma, Sunday, Purim.